Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, bringing you the best of my Times Radio show. You can listen live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1. Download the Times Radio app, listen online, ask your smart speaker, or just twiddle with your DAB radio in your car or in your kitchen. Or even better still, do it if you're in someone else's car or kitchen, and then break the knob off. Right, coming up on today's episode, Keir Starmer says he's going to not just stop the boats, but smash the gangs. We ask, will his plan work, and is it smart politics to try and fight the Tories on their turf? That's coming up in our big thing. Keir Starmer's been speaking to Times Radio about that. Before that, though, let's ask, what do you do when you've got a load of former prime ministers hanging about with these two?
Manveen Rana and someone called Matthew on Times Radio.
And they're both here, and even better than that, there's a box of donuts here, thanks to Manveen. We like it when you come in, Manveen.
Oh, I'm so glad. Maybe it'll be a new record.
Did you bring them?
Yeah, and Matthew was a bit late getting here, but he still managed to get a donut on the way. How are you?
Well, I've just managed to swallow in order to tell you that I'm very well.
Genuinely record-breaking.
Nice to have you. Good to have you both here. Now, I want to talk about backseat drivers because... You know, you wait for one former prime minister to come along and three come along at once. So you've got Boris Johnson writing in The Spectator today, accusing Rishi Sunak and other leaders, world leaders, of dragging their feet over supplying weapons to Ukraine. You've got Tony Blair in an interview with the FT this week said he would not be a backseat driver for Keir Starmer. You've got Theresa May still going around saying her Brexit deal would have been better than anything. Which is all a bit retro. What should Rishi Sunak... What should we take any notice of former prime ministers, Manveen?
I mean, it's quite entertaining, isn't it? Most of them sort of avoided the microphone or avoided the press as much as they could while they were in power, and suddenly they all want to have the moment where they can finally say what they always thought. I don't know. I don't know how much this is actually going to affect Rishi Sunak. I think it must be very annoying, the Boris Johnson piece. I think the Boris Johnson piece must be very annoying for a number of people, to be honest.
Not least
the people who are paying him a fortune for a column at the Daily Mail, and he goes and puts this in The Spectator.
Yeah.
But, you know, to say that Sunak is dragging his feet, there is a convention with former prime ministers where even if you are going to criticise what's happening, you do it obliquely. You do it in a way where you're criticising the principal. You don't name people and say you're dragging your feet. I sort of think he's doing this because he's a historian, right? And he's rewriting this version of history so that when people look back, they'll say he was the one always pushing for. Yeah. Whereas, you know, the Sunday Times, the Insight team, did a great investigation where they showed he'd ignored pleas from Ukraine for a number of years for weapons. And then since then, one of the reasons it's been so hard to provide them is because the defence budget has been so depleted.
Yeah, we didn't have the stuff to
give them. Yeah, so this is a great way now, retrospectively, of sort of saying, I've always said, I don't know why we're waiting so long.
You're too kind to call him a historian. He's an attention seeker, and he's been out of the limelight for a little while, and he's got a cheek. The thing is not led by Rishi Sunak anyway, it's led by the United States. If he wants to criticise the United States, who have contributed far more than us. Let him say so. Britain's contribution is relatively small, and it has continued along the lines that it was in when he was Prime Minister. Mm. I mean, he crashed the car. Telling the next person how to drive doesn't strike me as good form.
Well, in fact, talking of crashing the car, the one that I forgot who has been out about it this week as well is Liz Truss.
Yes.
You know, we've promised a book.
yes, we can't wait,
ironically.
Can we? No, when you ask, should Prime Ministers be backseat drivers, I think it rather depends who the Prime Minister is and whether they made a success of the job themselves. I am interested in Tony Blair's opinions. I'm interested in John Major's opinions. I'm not interested in Boris's opinions.
Is that just because you like and agree with the first two and not the last one?
Well, I often very much disagreed with Tony Blair, especially over Iraq. But that's a person of substance who's thought hard about this, who still has an institute, who's still doing research, and his opinions are worth listening to.
It's interesting, actually. Last night I caught up with, he was on the show earlier in the week, Michael Cockrell, BBC Four, re-showing some of his old documentaries with a new sort of introduction. I was watching the Ted Heath one last night. Because that's just how I like to spend my evenings. But it was fascinating. That reminder of his, you know, the incredible sulk and his rivalry with Margaret Thatcher and never really getting over that. And you can see that Boris Johnson, if I remember, I think
Rishi Sunak's got two versions.
He's got quite a lot of them.
Quite a lot.
Of hanging about. In fact, because I remember Nick Timothy came on the show and said that Theresa May had to be careful that she didn't become Ted Heath in a dress. which that was when she was constantly needling
what
Boris Johnson.
An appalling thought on so many levels.
Although I think some of her speeches from the back benches have been very powerful, actually.
Yeah.
And sort of have sort of shaped the debate more than she did when she was running the show.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
So I'm not sure I'd want her to stop those.
It is a really hard balance to strike. And clearly, David Cameron originally said he was going to stay in the Commons and lasted about 2 months before, I just can't sit here and not say anything, but was so committed to the idea that you didn't say anything and hasn't really done ever since, criticised any of them in any significant way.
We don't know what to do with them once they've been Prime Minister, and so it's no surprise they don't know what to do with themselves either.
I think with Theresa May, the reason she does those interventions, it's all down to conscience, and finally she can say what she really thinks. But, you know, I think it is a perennial problem. If you look at America, you know, Jimmy Carter couldn't sort of stop being president, so he'd go around trying to fix the Middle East in later years, which I think it was actually probably quite useful for a lot of the people who followed, because they didn't have to be seen in those places so
but
much.
I suppose because they're a head of state in America, there's a sort of, they're an adornment to the country in a way that we don't even think of the prime ministers when they're in that job. In the same way, that sort of status.
There would be an understanding in the United States that an ex-president doesn't go for the jugular of the sitting president. The sitting president has a kind of dignity of the office for exactly the reason that you say they're the head of state. So ex-presidents tend to do helpful things rather than carp from the sidelines.
Yeah. But actually, there's something about Theresa May's book that they're just listing all the things that weren't fixed while during her decade in power. Feels a bit rich.
Yes.
Well, just a little bit late.
Yeah.
A little bit late.
Oh, if only somebody done
something
about that.
I know. All those burning injustices, still burning.
Still burning. Anyway, if you want more of that, Theresa May is on with Ruth Davidson tomorrow afternoon, Friday afternoon from 1 o'clock.
We'll come back and heckle from the sidelines.
Yeah, heckle from the sidelines. Amazingly, not doing my show. Let's move on and talk about some live policy rather than the backbench drivers. Labour peers last night blocked a move by ministers to ease river pollution rules to boost house building. We've all become experts in nitrate neutrality. Michael Gove accused Keir Starmer of destroying the dream of home ownership. Labour said that you can build houses without putting more muck in the rivers. Who's going to be on the right side in the end on this one, do you think?
Oh, there's no doubt at all that the government got itself on the wrong side. It made this amendment very late in the day, kind of on a Tuesday afternoon during the recess, when the bill had almost passed all its stages. And the amendment, if you read it, I wrote a whole Saturday column about this, so I'm afraid I'm a bit of a bore on the subject, but the amendment is quite ludicrous. It basically says that pollution doesn't mean pollution if it comes from new housing. The idea that housing is going to be blocked on a large scale is wrong. House builders are not blocked from building in places where they might contribute to environmental pollution, but they are obliged to show how they will mitigate, perhaps by paying money to English Nature or building new or helping with the construction of new sewage works. So the house builders don't actually have to do anything. They probably just have to pay into a market that was developing for mitigations. And for some reason, Michael Gove just ploughed it all up at the last moment. I don't know why.
And it's the last minute nature of it. The fact that they tried to stick it in at the last minute and now it's been thrown out, so they can't do it again because the bill's gone through. So it's not even a sort of well thought out policy.
It's a terrible strategy.
Yeah.
Now it's gone and gone for good, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was really interesting. Michael Gove's big grandiose speech about this now shattering the dreams of so many across the country who won't get a house as a result of it. Whereas actually, you know, as Michael says, it should mean that they get a house that's just a little bit more environmentally friendly. You know, I think a lot of people have sort of said, in the greater scheme of things, farming is contributing much more to river pollution. Let the house builders get away with it. But I think if you are talking about which side of history were they going to be on, I can't help thinking Labour got it right on this. And actually, you know, the most damning speech in that debate came from a former Tory environment minister, which was incredibly strong.
Who was that?
Sort of, I think it was Lord Deepin.
Oh yes,
who came out and pointed out this was a terrible piece of legislation. This would lead to the biggest problem that an awful lot of people have been complaining about, the state of our rivers, would only get worse. Deliberately, and you know, this legislation would be in play for a very long time. It just seems completely mad.
Is it also something, Matthew, that not just they got the policy wrong, which is obviously what the debate was about, but also the politics? That at a time when the Lib Dems' entire election strategy seems to be talking about poo in rivers, and that seems to be playing very well, that the salience of this as an issue is very high, and this idea that as a metaphor for Britain, you know, the rivers all being full of poo is, you know, just about sums it all up. To then go and find a whole new issue on exactly that. So we want to put more stuff in the rivers. It's just bad politics.
Absolutely right. I mean, it would be populist politics of the better kind to act on things like river pollution because people are bothered about it. I think the Conservative Party is, in its head, there's a general public that doesn't exist anymore. There's a general public that hates all the green crap, as David Cameron once called it, that doesn't like all this bunny-hugging stuff and is, on the whole, just in favour of ripping ahead with as much house building as you can get. I don't think that Britain exists anymore, and I see it in my readers of my column, because, as I say, I wrote about this. I had about 1,000 comments, and three-quarters of Times readers were against the idea of ripping up these environmental rules. And Michael Gove, in a very fine speech he made, I think in about 2018, promised that there would be no drawing back from the level of protection within the European Union. It was going to be a Brexit bonus that we could enhance, not draw back. Yeah. And now he's drawn back. And I tried to.
Because it's such a... Well, it's already a difficult sell for them. You know, it's worth polluting the rivers because we're going to build more houses. Because the feels like the public is so tired of the Tory government, they don't get the benefit of the doubt. Mm. It's such a hard sell. The people just think, surely it's possible to build houses without polluting rivers. You know, we just don't buy the idea this is the only thing that's going wrong.
Well, also, there's that sort of where this is us ripping up former EU legislation.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, that's what meant that the neutrality thing was so important. So, you know, this is a Brexit bonus, but it's not going to happen. And I think actually, you know, what Matthew was saying is really interesting. It is about sort of the Tories working out who their core voters are. And, you know, in the past, you would assume it would have been, a lot of the places where the Lib Dems are doing very well now, you know, it would have been the Guildfords, it would have been, you know, the country. If you go to the country, they don't love the idea of having, poo and rivers. So it just feels like they're trying to work out who their constituents are now. And I get the feeling they're going to end up alienating a lot of the people who would have voted for them in the past without necessarily finding a replacement, as they did with Red Wall.
Yeah. Well, exactly, and just appealing to an ever, ever smaller group of people.
Yeah.
The people who still think Brexit was a good idea and is going well, and therefore isn't it great that we've torn up this so we can pollute the rivers.
But also sort of think climate change isn't really a thing.
Small Venn diagram, that one.
Green councillors were elected in the local elections in my constituency in Derbyshire, what was my constituency in Derbyshire.
But always and, will be in the hearts of the people of...
my patch, yes. But it, a more conservative part of England, you cannot imagine. Mm. And it was not on Labour or Liberal Democrat votes that those Green councillors alone were elected.
Yeah. Let me just tell you about something which happened 4 weeks. It's only 4 weeks ago. Till the Cheltenham Literature Festival. We are going to be there live on Friday, October the 13th. We're doing the show live. You can come and see us. We are asking, what year is it? Not because we don't know, but which political year is it? 1997, 1992, 1974? We've got a cracking panel on the Times Radio debate. We've got Kate McCann, our political editor, Patrick Maguire, Aisha Hazarika, and Professor John Curtis, the pollster. So if you want to come and see us live, just go to cheltenhamfestivals.com, search for my name or something. I'm doing loads of stuff there. Possibly also talking about my book, which is out four weeks today. But I don't want to go on about that. But if you want to get tickets to come and see us live, go online and do that. Right, now, I'm still joined by Matthew Paris and Manveen Rana here in the studio. So, Manveen and Matthew, let's do this.
Record breaker. If you're the tallest, the smallest, if you beat them all. If you're the fattest, the thinnest, if you always win. If you're the fastest, the slowest, if you really go, then you're a record breaker.
Yeah, so the 2024 edition of Guinness World Records is out today with 2,500 new records made this year. Greg Glenday is the editor-in-chief. He joins us. Hi, Greg.
Hello, good morning.
Now, it's very exciting because we've got a record breaker in the studio. Matthew Perry. I don't know, actually, I assume it's probably not in the book, but Matthew, what's the record that you hold?
I am the fastest Member of Parliament ever to run the London Marathon, but by an hour, actually, so I'm rather proud of that one.
I'm still baffled. Did you cheat?
No.
Did you have like a moped?
I trained, Matthew.
You trained?
Yes.
Well, very good. Manby, do you hold any records?
No,
right, well, let's... Craig is going to maybe give us some ideas of things that you could try to do.
Great. Well, because I was that part of that generation that watched Record Breakers.
Loved Record
and wanted
breakers.
To break one, but by the age of 8, I knew I wasn't going to be the tallest person in the world.
Yeah. Oh. Well, maybe you could have the longest hair. Oh, no, because that's of a teenager. Craig, take us through some of the new records in the book this year.
We've had a huge, vast spectrum of claims this year. Some of the most fun ones, I think, things like the largest collection of Care Bears. So we have a guy who was...
Let's look at the there. How many do you think are in a large collection of Care Bears, Matthew?
3,220.
Who still has Care Bears?
How many do you think, Manveen?
They're quite big. 900.
Okay. Craig,
split the difference. It's 1,234.
Wow.
He changed his name to Nicholas Cherrywood, who's one of the Care Bear characters because he's such a fan of the brand. So we're very happy to go and meet him, take his photograph, get his bears counted.
Now, is that a new entry because no one else has previously done this before? So by dint of being the first person to contact you and you not be able to find anyone else, you automatically get in?
Yeah, last week, could you have won with 5?
Yes, well, no. So yes, it's a new record, but if there's a new category created, we have a minimum, we set a minimum. Collections, for example, tend to be 500 is the minimum you need to prove that you've got enough to make it worth our while coming to count. So over 1,000 is lovely. If you said 5, we would have just politely said, go away. But yes, we've got longest hair on a teenager, as you said.
Yeah, this is another good guessing game.
Good guessing game.
You can go first on this. How long is the longest hair on a teenager? I actually don't know, so I could join in.
A metre?
No, that's fine. No, yeah. That's what you're going for, Manveen, a metre. I'm going to say 5 metres.
I'm going to say 5 feet.
So again, you're somewhere in between. Yeah, so remember this is a teenage boy. It's 4'3", so 130 centimetres, so 1.3 metres.
There you go.
You were very close. Sorry, I thought a metre was ridiculous.
You've never tried to grow hair, have you?
I did have a mullet once, but it wasn't a metre long.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
We have mullet records. But this year, for the first time, we opened the mullet category.
Right.
I discovered there was a mullet world championships. In fact, there are more than one world championships in mullets, but the biggest one is in the USA. And we found an amazing lady called Tammy, and she, well, how long do you think her party is back?
This is an adult. Something you know.
This is an adult, but this is my area of expertise.
An adult woman, yeah, who's got a party in the back, which is how long do you think?
well, I'm 3 metres, I'm going to go.
The longest hair was a metre.
I know, but that was a teenager.
Oh, okay.
So she's got an adult lifetime of growing it.
And it falling out.
Yeah. I've got one or three. No, go on, Matthew.
Well, we have a male and a female category as well. So, yeah.
2 feet.
Two. Your determination to stick with the Imperials is
impressive. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I'm going to go for half a metre.
Yeah, okay, do it in furlongs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, come on.
Well, I think Matthew really close. Is 5'8".
5'8?
So 172 centimetres, exactly, yes. So it's now trailing along the ground for this woman.
A mullet as long as Matthew Paris.
Mullet, the hair as in not the fish.
And are there any non-hair-based new records in the book, Greg?
Yeah, we've got things like people who build houses of cars. So a very old-school, classic.
Classic. That's proper thing, record breakers territory, isn't it?
Exactly, you were talking about record breakers. They had the theme tune there. If I had a pound for every time that was played.
You must be sick of it.
I'm a bit sick of it, yes.
Could you enter the book for holding the record for the person who's heard the theme tune to Record Breakers the most?
probably not, no. We reject about 95% of what we receive, to be honest. So,
Could I claim a record for having bored newspaper readers with regular columns for longer than any other columnist in journalism?
Well, boring is far too subjective. I wouldn't say
yes.
But, I mean, as boring as your columns are, I wouldn't say that.
You're not claiming to be the longest. So you must have a long-serving columnist category.
There ought to be, yes.
We do, yeah. We have things like longest-serving editor, longest-serving columnist, oldest columnist, people who are still into their hundreds.
You've got a little while to go, yeah.
25 years. Yeah.
What about any radio-related things? Could I try and get in if I wanted to?
How long would you have continuously broadcast?
Yes, that's a good one. How long would I have to be on the radio for?
Well, I think we're now talking multiple days. Up to 5 or 6 days. Let me just check.
Non-stop?
Non-stop. Well, you're allowed to have a break. For every hour you broadcast, you can accrue a 5-minute break just for sort of decency. I mean, the longest radio interview, just the interview, one interview was 25 hours non-stop. Yeah. That was last year,
in fact.
That
was Theresa May. Grind out a news line.
You're bedded in for quite a long time. I mean,
I think the last time
we saw this was 121 hours as a non-stop broadcast. So
I think about that.
Matt, if you want to do this, we'll bring you the coffee.
Does Liz Truss get in as shortest-serving Prime Minister?
Well, we don't do UK. I mean, in the very old days, we used to do UK records and world records. And now we only look at world records because otherwise we'd have to look at every country. It just becomes an impossible task. So we were watching it all with great amusement to see if there could be any world record in this. But no, there are. I think there are leaders of countries that come and go within minutes often.
So she wasn't even world beating in that.
No, exactly.
Craig, of all of the records in the book, which is the one that you'd like to have?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I'd quite happily tackle being the richest person. yes. I've always quite fancied going into space. I've been trying to court Richard Branson and Musk and all that lot to give me a seat on one of these things, but I can't pay for it myself. So
no,
but I'd happily go up to adjudicate a record. So maybe we had William Shatner up on one of them as the oldest man.
Space.
So William Shatner is now the oldest man in space.
Oldest
amazingly.
Man in space. There we are.
They wouldn't let me sit next to him to adjudicate. So.
I want to be the first gay man on the moon.
Manveen Rana and Matthew Paris. Then, of course, you can listen to Manveen on the Stories of Our Times podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from, probably wherever you're listening to this. Or you can read Matthew Paris in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, will Keir Starmer's plan stop the boats?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast. Now it's time for this.
The Big Thing on Times Radio.
So when it comes to immigration, we know what Rishi Sunak's plan is.
I said I would stop the boats, and I meant it.
Even if so far, he hasn't quite. So Keir Starmer has a new plan of his own.
Before you get to deterrence, you have to smash the gang.
Yeah, today, the Labour leader is trying to move his tanks onto the Tories' lawn. Tanks and boats is confusing this. Moving his tanks onto the Tories' lawn. He says he'll tackle the problem of the tens of thousands of migrants crossing the Channel every year. He says by smashing the people smuggling gangs. Well, immigration has been a difficult issue for the Labour Party in the past. But Keir Starmer wants to show he doesn't have any no-go areas. Today, we're going to try and work out, do his plans stack up? And if it's good policy, is it good politics? First, I'm joined by Times Radio's political editor, Kate McCann, who's been speaking to Keir Starmer. Morning, Kate.
Morning.
So let's listen to what he was telling you. Let's hear a bit more of him setting out his plan to smash the gangs.
Well, look, I think that before you get to deterrence, you have to smash the gang that is organising this crime in the first place. And we know that serious organised immigration crime is being run by gangs across borders involving the movement of people, and equipment, and involving a huge amount of money that is being made by these gangs that are driving this vile trade. Now, that is not unique, because you have similar operations when it comes to terrorism, ammunition and guns being sent across borders, human trafficking, particularly of women being exploited for sex. So there are examples of how these gangs can be smashed. And so what I want to see is a new security agreement with Europe, where we can work with our partners in Europol and Eurojust with a cross-border police unit.
So, okay, let's unpack some of that. Smashing the gangs is a, you know, when he was leaning into his sort of history, direct public prosecutions, likening smuggling gangs to terrorists, but so it's sort of a legal thing alongside a closer alignment essentially with the EU.
That's exactly it. And it's the major point of difference between what the Tories are promising and what Labour are now suggesting. Essentially, Labour are removing this element of deterrent or changing it. I put that to Keir Starmer and he said, you know, actually the best deterrent is to smash the gangs. And he sees this legal route as the answer, because the Rwanda policy isn't actually in operation yet. And even when and if it is, lots of experts don't believe it's really going to stop people making those choices because they're so desperate to cross the channel. So Keir Starmer's proposal is to take it much more seriously, to treat people smugglers and those who are buying dinghies, selling them, using them in the same way that you would other organised crime. I think there are some complications with that. It's very easy to get dinghies, very easy to move them across Europe to put people in them. The UK government is already working with France, paying French police to patrol. We're already in some of those control centres and we already do share data in real time. So this is an extension of those things. I think the bigger question, though, for Keir Starmer, he's trying to trade on this idea that he's a legal expert and he understands it. But most people's actual sort of lived experience and the emotional reaction to this issue,
that doesn't really satisfy. And I think that's where you're starting to see the disconnect today.
The other thing is, it sounds so obvious that you would treat the trafficking gangs like drugs. Like you said, the government's sort of half doing it already. If it was that straightforward, they'd have done it. It's not like a lack of interest and enthusiasm for doing something.
No, although I think Labour's suggestion is the government isn't putting enough time and effort and money in that direction. And there's certainly more that could be done. But the National Crime Agency itself has said that the problem with people smuggling gangs is that they're often low-level people and there are lots and lots of them. So when you get rid of one person, another one pops up to take their place. Now, what Keir Starmer is proposing is to tackle the bigger people in those gangs. But they won't necessarily be in this country. They may well move around. They could be hard to prosecute and ultimately hard to stop because they'll just pass that business onto somebody else. I mean, the reality is this problem is very difficult to solve and people want to hear honest explanations. And that's when you get into this conversation about, well, will the UK accept more migrants as a result of this?
The trade-off. Well, he also said, like you were saying, that he would scrap the Rwanda policy, not least because it is currently not working. So you asked him what the deterrent would be instead.
The deterrence is that the gang is taken out because it's the gangs that are pushing this and running it. Very many people are spending a lot of money spent on these gangs that are telling them and controlling what they do.
Yeah.
So the best deterrence you can have is to take the gangs down.
And that would be enough?
Well, it would be a massive step in the right direction. Yeah. If you compare it to what was happening a number of years ago where lorries were being used, where people were jumping on trains, you can see that if you take effective action, you can actually deal with this problem.
Isn't the reality here that, in truth, the quickest way to solve this problem would be to set up safe and legal routes? Will you just be honest with people and say, we let more people in, we stop the gangs, but under Labour, net migration goes up?
No, under Labour, we get control of this situation. At the moment, we've got the appalling situation where we are not deciding as a country who's coming to the UK. The gangs are deciding. That is fundamentally wrong.
Let's just listen to some of the response from the government today. Steve Barclay, the health secretary, was on Times Radio this morning giving his response to what Keir Starmer had been saying.
What Keir Starmer is proposing is the opposite. It's getting rid of the deterrent of the Rwanda policy. It's letting the EU decide the quotas of what the UK would take, and that is giving up control of our immigration policy.
Now, one of the things that came to mind, Kate, was that back in the summer, the Times, Matt Dathan, reported that Britain was trying to negotiate its own deal with the EU on migrant returns, and it had been rejected. So, and that would probably have involved a bit of give and take in terms of numbers.
Well, I think the reason it probably was rejected is that this government wasn't willing to go down that route. And that's the dividing line now between Labour and the Conservatives. What's really interesting in both of those clips is that both men, Keir Starmer and Steve Barclay for the government, are talking about control. They use that word, control. And the reason for that is when you look at the polling on immigration, people are not necessarily too upset about the idea of people arriving and living in the UK legally. But what they want to understand is how it's going to be controlled. The government's answer to that is to stop all illegal migration, or to try to, and not to set up safe and legal routes. They're very clear on the numbers question.
Yeah, yeah.
For Labour, the control is different. The control is about stopping gangs having the power in this equation. And you get the impression that they are more willing to have those routes and those returns, accepting people. I think they're basing that on the fact that people in this country, when they are asked, are generally reasonably open to immigration. But that won't make the political argument easier at a general election, because you are already seeing, we're on day one of Labour's immigration policy official, that argument about, oh, well, Keir Starmer wants to give back control to Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
You went through Brexit for this and now he's giving back control.
Yeah, yeah.
The exact really opposite of the promise. And that's going to be quite hard for them to counter.
Oh, we'll dig into some of the politics in a bit with actually a former advisor to Keir Starmer. But Kate, really good to see you. Kate McCann, Times Radio's political editor, who's been speaking to Keir Starmer about his plans. Well, will they work? Let's try and get our heads around it. John Vine is a former Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration and joins us now. Hi, John.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm very well. Based on what you've heard and seen about what Keir Starmer is saying, is he likely to have any more success in the primary aim, which everyone seems to have, of stopping as many people coming across the Channel in small boats?
Well, no, because I haven't heard any of the detail about how this is going to be implemented. I mean, the what is, the same as what the Conservative government at the moment wants to achieve. They want to break the criminal gangs. There have been numerous initiatives over the last few years under the former Prime Minister Theresa May and her successors about doing this. Money has been allocated to the French to help us deal with the migrants on the beaches in northern France. But none of that has actually worked in the way that the government would like to have seen. And so I've not heard anything from the Labour Party at the moment which tells me what is actually going to be different in the way they tackle this issue. At the moment, we'll await that detail, I think.
Is there an element, John, that actually this issue of the number of people coming across the channel is just a very visible example of something that has actually been happening for a long time, and because other routes have been closed down, that people smuggle themselves into the UK on the train, the Eurostar, or in the backs of lorries and so on. Those have been really tightly controlled. Anyone who's been through Calais knows that. And that actually this is just an issue which has gone on for a long time. There will always be people who try to get into the country, and it's quite hard to do anything about that.
No, you're absolutely right. It is hard. It was much easier to stop people getting into the backs of lorries. You can use technology to detect whether they're there. You're on, you know, terra firma. You can actually deploy people to intervene, and you can also put up physical barriers to stop people getting into the country in that way. But of course, when you're involving people floating, you know, small inadequate sea craft onto the English Channel, it's much more difficult, because as soon as they're afloat, it becomes a rescue operation. And what we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years, an exponential rise in people travelling to the UK this way. This is totally unacceptable for any country. It's a breach of border control, pure and simple. The organised crime gangs are making vast profits out of it. And it's entirely right that the government and the opposition should try and tackle this. But it's not easy. And a lot of the ways that have been tried, involving intelligence, use of the National Crime Agency, that is the way forward, but it needs more resources and it needs more effort on their part to do it. There's nothing wrong in aspiring for that, but recently, as your previous correspondent said, I think the National Crime Agency went on record and said, this can't be something that can be tackled through enforcement alone.
And just finally, John, is it also, I mean, we've got Keir Starmer, he's in The Hague today, at the headquarters of Europol. He's meeting Emmanuel Macron next week. There's talk of trying to negotiate a sort of returns deal, which means some people who come to the UK illegally will be sent back, but then it might mean that people came here through legal routes instead. Is part of the problem here that one of the byproducts of Brexit and the idea of sort of cutting ties and so on is that sort of cooperation, international cooperation, has become a dirty word?
Well, we used to have something called the Dublin Agreement, which some people would argue was useful. Other people thought it was well-intentioned, but it didn't really make a great deal of difference. And as a country, we've returned fewer and fewer people to other countries abroad over the last, say, 10 years. We were sending back many, many thousands of people 10 years ago, and that's reduced to a trickle. I think there are two things. When the Prime Minister went to see Emmanuel Macron a few months ago, beginning of the year perhaps, he asked whether there could be a returns agreement with France. And Macron said, no, this has to be an agreement with Europe. And so I think what Keir Starmer is now saying is that, well, let's go to Europe and see if we can get an agreement. In relation to returns, this opens up a whole new area of discussion and debate, because how many people would we return? How many people would we allow to arrive in the UK through safe and legal routes? And yes, it would have an impact on some of the smuggling, but I don't think it would stop it completely, because there would have to be a limit. And beyond that limit, of course, then organised crime would step in again and offer the services they're offering at the moment.
John, really, really good to get your insight today. Thanks for that. It's John Vine there, former Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration, looking at the practicalities of the policy being laid out by Keir Starmer. Very good morning to you. It's Matt Shawley on at Times Radio, taking a look at Keir Starmer's plans to tackle illegal immigration, including, as he says, to smash the boats. Well, smash the gangs. Stop the boats, smash the gangs. Or, I mean, whatever. It's all interchangeable. So we've talked a bit about the practicalities of it. Let's turn our attention now to the politics of this policy. And Labour's not always had an easy time talking about immigration.
Let's take you back to the Ed Miliband years when he chiselled the words controls on immigration onto a big stone and also sold Labour Party mugs which said the same thing, which caused a big row within Labour.
Tough controls, it's a pledge from us, it's on the mug, and I'm hoping after the general election I can do a toast in that mug as we get on and change Britain for the better, for the future.
I'm not responsible for all Labour Party merchandise, and that was not... I didn't purchase one of those mugs myself, and I'm not particularly proud of them.
That was Andy Burnham there, and then before that, Ed Balls. Well, let's now speak to James Schneider, former Director of Strategic Communications for Jeremy Corbyn, to get his take on the politics of this. Hi, James.
Hiya, how are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Are you joining us this morning with a hot coffee in your controls on immigration mug?
I am not, no. I mean, you've just been hearing from some experts how this macho talk from Starmer isn't terribly well thought through on the policy level. And I don't think it seems terribly well thought through on either the political strategy or the communications level. I mean, you know, as a political strategy, you're driving up an issue without particularly believable solutions or very useful dividing lines with the Tories.
James Schneider, former Director of Strategic Communications for Jeremy Corbyn. Claire Ainslie is Director of the Progressive Policy Institute's Centre-Left Renewal Project. She's also former Head of Policy for the Labour Party under Keir Starmer. Hi, Claire.
Hi there.
I'm not sure what's happened to James. We'll try and find him later on. Claire, what do you make of this policy? As in sort of policy terms, first of all, because clearly if you're head of policy of the Labour Party, you need to come up with policy that works. Does it work as a policy before we come on to the politics?
Yeah, and I think it is interesting to think about the proposals that Labour have come up with. You've got a Labour opposition coming up with what looks like, to me, a really serious set of proposals, and contrasting that with a government that seems to be governing by campaign mode. So it sort of says everything about the mess that we're in at the moment. I mean, what Starmer and Yvette Cooper, Shadow Home Secretary, are putting forward today, to me, looks like a pretty seriously thought through plan from a number of different aspects about how you tackle this specific aspect of the criminal gangs. And I think the contrast that they're putting out in their proposals are that in order to tackle this problem, which undoubtedly is a problem, not just politically, but a really serious problem, and it could get worse, you've got to get to the gangs that are the root cause of this. And they're saying they would have a new security agreement. They're talking about data sharing that's not been possible because of the government's botched Brexit plans, and redirecting resources so that you have more UK officers posted at Europol, in contrast to the Tories, which have obviously vested much of the publicity and the resources around this big barge, around the press conferences, and obviously the Rwanda plan. So I think there is a pretty big dividing line opening up here about how you actually tackle this. And I have to say, I would give the team, the Labour team, credit for coming up with something which they know is going to be difficult politically, but for giving it a real reset of this debate with some serious proposals that I think actually are more likely to be believed by the public and be worked through by the time we come to the next election.
Is there a risk, and I suppose this is always when you're coming up with policy in opposition and choosing when to put it out and so on, is there a risk that they've fallen into essentially a Tory trap, that Rishi Sunak chose to make this one of his five priorities, stopping the boats? He didn't say one of his five priorities was to bring down the extraordinarily high levels of legal migration, which is probably having a bigger impact on people's everyday lives. You know, the number of people coming across the channel is actually very small compared to the high number of net migration. But you sort of fall into the trap. They want to talk about stop the boats because it means they can talk about foreigners and Europe and Brexit and all of that. And in making a big song and dance about this policy, which clearly has holes in it as well, as we were just hearing before, that it just puts up in light that the Tories will be tougher. They'll talk tougher. They have got the big barge. They have got Rwanda. And actually, you're sort of trying to fight them on their territory.
I think Starmer and Labour are right to be on the front foot on this issue, and Starmer will be at this global summit of the centre-left in Montreal tomorrow, I believe, and over the weekend, making the case for why the centre-left needs to be on the front foot on the issue. This is already an issue for voters, for sure. There was polling done by YouGov this week for WPI strategy that showed that immigration, asylum and immigration overall is about fourth. So it's in the top five of issues. But amongst key voter groups, particularly where Labour's lead is narrower, I might say, in the Midlands, the north of England, it's actually the second issue for voters. So I think there is just no getting away from it. I also think this is going to potentially become more of an issue for politicians. So as you see people displaced by climate change and by global instability, you are going to see these movements of people. And I think that if the centre-left and the Labour Party and others kind of get out of the way, you cede all of the territory to the political right. And you've seen what happens. You have quite a hostile debate rather than, I think, what Labour is trying to do here, which is have a much more serious plan that acknowledges some of the realities that we're facing, doesn't just stand in front of a podium saying stop the boats, and every week we're seeing record numbers of crossings. I mean, it's failing policy, but actually says let's do the hard graft, the negotiations, the agreements. Let's do that hard graft to actually tackle this problem at the root. So I strongly believe that Labour are doing the right thing by going on the front foot, and they should be supported and given credit for doing so.
And what about the some of the headlines today? The front of the Daily Mail, Labour ready to open door to EU's asylum seekers. They're talking about negotiating an EU-wide returns agreement for asylum seekers who come to Britain. Keir Starmer acknowledges the quid pro quo of any deal might mean accepting quotas of migrants from the EU, but says that's for later. That's for future negotiations with Brussels. If this is a proper, fully thought-out plan to be taken seriously, doesn't Keir Starmer have to be honest with voters about that? That actually this does mean closer alignment with the EU, and it probably will mean a lot of people, possibly even the same number of people coming here, but just under an organised plan rather than the chaotic situation we have at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the argument he's basically putting forward, is saying that you either do this in a controlled and managed way, and this country has always taken a certain number of refugees. If they've got a legal right to be here, you need to process their claims. And if they haven't, then you need to be comfortable that that does involve removing them from the border. So Starmer is basically saying, we choose to do a negotiated, controlled, managed route rather than that chaos that we are seeing. And I'm not surprised why people are objecting to people crossing the channel in such unsafe ways, but also in a way that means we can't manage it either. I mean, why is it good politics in good sense to put people on this barge that's costing £18 million a year when you could actually put those resources into enforcing the agreements you've got? So I think this is a pretty mature, serious plan. I think it's the right way for the country. I saw Starmer this morning, you know, outside. They got just issued their statement from Europol this morning. I mean, he looked like a prime minister. I thought it's only a shame you've got to wait until a general election till we get the chance to do that, because I think they're politically on the right territory. But this is about showing the kinds of politics that I think the country is crying out for, which is a bit more of a long-term plan.
Okay, Claire, thanks so much for that. Claire Ainsley there, former head of policy for Keir Starmer and the Labour Party, now at the Progressive Policy Institute. James Schneider is here, former director of strategic communications for Jeremy Corbyn. This is a mature, serious plan, James.
Well, I wish it were, and I wish it were more of what Claire was saying, because what she was saying sounded quite good. This isn't what has been put forward either in the policy, which is pretty thin and pretty half-baked, and all the comms, which has gone in very hard on the basically similar framing to the Tories with smash the boats, smash the gangs, whatever, trying to be tough, not talking in the way in which Claire was, and leaving yourself totally open to the dividing lines that the Tories and the right want anyway, because he, rather than saying with his chest, we need to come to an agreement with Europe, that will mean that we're swapping uncontrolled and unsafe flows of refugees for controlled and safe flows of refugees. And to do that, we need to have an agreement with Europe. He's sort of slightly hidden that, which then gives more power to the Daily Mail splash and the other attacks by the Tories saying that he basically wants to go back into Europe.
Is it politically, would it be better if he just left this as an issue? Albeit that there might then be questions about you don't even have a plan. But if you're 20 points ahead in the polls, this feels like potentially wading into this might just actually knock the edge off rather than boosting it.
I mean, Labour don't have a plan for quite a lot of things. That's part of the, that's basically part of the strategy, is to stand there and point at the Tories what a mess they've made of the country and say, in comparison, we look better. And, either you do a really comprehensive, proper policy where you say exactly what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and you fight for it on terms, which isn't what Starmer has done today, or you don't drive something where you're basically losing up the political agenda. And unfortunately, this drives something where Labour's losing up the political agenda,
James,
providing solutions.
James, good to speak to you. Thanks so much for that. James Schneider there, former Director of Strategic Communications for Jeremy Corbyn. Lots of you getting in touch about this. Lots of you getting in touch. Somebody says, I've worked with Border Force and Emergency Response stuff, and they are hands down the most annoying jobs worst of all the agencies. Andrew in Henfield says, the Brexiteers told us that taking back control of our borders. Strange that before Brexit, we didn't have small boats. After we have control, the problem has exploded. I don't think the government wants to solve this problem, as it keeps this in the headlines and they can hit the opposition about immigration, helping them, they think, they can save a few seats in the next election. And someone else says, the increasing influence of more right-wing politicians in Europe who are very vocal about migration and have given... And the only route to the UK is through Europe. I suspect that migration control will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the podcast. Don't forget, you can get in touch at any point by emailing me, matt@times.radio, especially if you're still cross about Rory Stewart. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.